Hello and welcome to episode number 42 of Inglourious Artists. And this time, it's time for another one of those actors having a chat episodes. Because today I'm talking to this person.
Ida Gyllensten. And I am a singer and an actress.
I don't think this is the first time, but we have like a properly educated actor here right now, because you actually done one of those proper drama school, London drama school things.
Yeah.
Was it Drama Centre, right?
Yeah. Drama Centre London, yeah.
Yeah. That's full on, isn't it? Is that like 4 years or 3 years?
Well, it's not actually, because I did an MA.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. So.
So it's 2 years, but it's... It was pretty intense anyway, I would say.
Well, it have to be if it's just 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So
what does it entail? Tell me all about the drama school experience, because I'm one of those, you know, the proletariats when it comes to actors who've just done this intensive 1 year film acting course, blah blah. So I feel kind of beneath people who are, you know, properly drama school educated.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I think we who were on the MA always felt a bit like we were the proletarians, like if you compared us to the BA people
who sure.
did like a 3-year course, because they did the stuff that Drama Centre London is actually really famous for, which is like the yacht work. And they did that really
now?
Properly. The yacht work.
Okay.
It's like they also did some of it in Gothenburg.
Okay.
At the Teaterhögskolan there.
Right.
We did some of it, but it's a way of finding essences of different characters through movement, and quite an elaborate sort of way of building characterizations.
All right, I don't know why I haven't heard about that technique.
The yacht work.
Is that like in somebody's name?
Yes, Jatte Malmgren.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's a blind spot in my education.
Yeah. We did some of it, and it was amazing. And I always kind of wanted to maybe do a bit more, because I always felt a bit like that was the thing that gave the Drama Centre. Because the Drama Centre, when I started trying out for drama school, it was the one who had like that kind of. It had a really like intense aura, like the Drama Centre. It had really had a reputation for being like really intense and very method, and it was in this old kind of. Almost church-like building in Chalk Farm.
Well, of course, England.
In London, yeah. And it just, I don't know, it just had this kind of presence. And I was like, God, I really want to get it. It had a black box, like a completely kind of square room, like a black box theater. And it was just had this kind of, it was very...
It had a vibe.
Yes, it really had a vibe. Yeah. But then kind of when I actually got in, because I didn't get in the first year, I got in the second time, and then it was for the MA.
All right. And did you also try for like RADA and the other schools?
I did actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not RADA, but I tried... or did I? No, I don't think I did. I tried for, I think, Lambda and Central and...
The big ones, basically.
Yeah. I got sort of like a bit of the way.
Yeah.
In a few of them, like Guildhall, which.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
But then I kind of always wanted to go to the Drama Centre.
Yeah. Well, then. Yeah. Well, any of them that you actually do get into, it's like you won. Yeah. None of them are bad. You know, they have all the famous alumni from any of them.
Yeah.
Drama Centre is like, what do we have? We have like Russell Brand and people like that.
This is funny. I actually kind of knew Russell Brand before he was really famous.
Yeah.
Because I used to work, and this was before I went to drama school. I used to work in a club called 93 Feet East, which was on Brick Lane.
Okay.
And my friend Dimitri, he was the manager, and we kind of like I was basically like the bartender.
Oh yeah. Hmm.
and Russell Brand were kind of friends with the owners. And so he used to do nights there, like kind of stand-up stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, it wasn't really stand-up. It was stand-up, but it also actually entailed him like live killing rats.
What?
Yeah.
He would never do that today.
No, he would never do. Now he's like enlightened or
something.
Yeah,
he's spiritualist.
He's
fuck,
very
yeah.
spiritual these days. But yeah, he was pretty mental, I think, back then.
But okay. But was that, had he already found that style with the crazy hair and the sleaze rocker outfits? And
he always looked quite like sleazy, I guess. Yeah. Funny, charming. Yeah, very funny, interesting person, I would say.
Where did he find already the rats? Poor things.
That's so bad. Anyway, yeah, okay.
Oh, anyway, yeah. And what's the process for getting into one of these schools? So you have to do a Shakespeare and a modern and monologue and things like that, right?
Yeah. You have to do monologues, and then they were like, you stayed around and they did movement stuff. And
To see that you could move at all. Or what?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been such a good mover, I suppose. So I always felt that was one of my like drawbacks as a performer in a way. Because I just don't have that coordination. I've tried dancing and ballet and everything. I'm just not good at it.
Yeah, I talked with a previous guest who was a dancer about this. That I'm terrible when it comes to any kind of dance that where you have to learn steps and dance with somebody else.
Yeah.
Because then I'm just too left feet and I have to think too much, you know. But if I'm by myself and I'm allowed to improvise, a whole different story.
Completely, yeah. Like if you just get to be free and express yourself through movement.
Yeah,
I know. But it's so weird. Like, I don't know why it's hard to feel that freedom. Like, it must be wonderful if you can follow the form and then find the freedom as well inside it.
Sure, yeah. Have some basis. But do you keep it up in any way? Do you do any yoga or any sort of...
Yeah, no, loads. I mean, I go all the time to Yoga Kendra.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. I go like 3-4 times a week probably. But like Hatha yoga and also just like the really slow like yin meditation-y yoga.
Yeah, it's all good stuff. I do it myself, but just here at home.
Yeah, I do it at home as well. Mm. But we have like, well, our flat is now so crammed and it's hard to get really
space. You need yoga space.
Yeah, you do need yoga space.
And a good mat.
Yes.
That big red one I have there is perfect because it doesn't move at all.
Yeah, but I would say, like, I mean, I do wish I had done more of a proper, because I feel like now in my kind of, well, I don't want to really reveal my age. I guess it's widely available on the internet anyway.
But it's frowned upon to do that as an actor.
Yes.
I'm the age you need me to be.
Well, exactly. But you know, I finally find that I've actually found that kind of more base, because I felt that with my training that I did at the drama center, because it was an MA, I didn't feel like I really got that kind of baseline training in terms of like the physicality and all that.
Okay, so you feel like what you lacked was the foundation, not the specialization. You went straight into it's a master's.
Yes, exactly, because that's what they gave me, and I was kind of, I really wanted to go there. I was kind of, I've always been very stubborn and just very much going on like some vibe or an idea of what I think that I want. Mm. And then when I got in there, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I finally got it. Like, but it wasn't really exactly what I thought it would be. And also the same year that I did get in, they moved from that whole church and everything.
Okay.
Yeah, now it's basically part of the Central St. Martin's College of Art and Design.
Ah, yeah.
So it's just in the kind of, when I went, it was these, well, beautiful spaces, but it was like old kind of factory, industrial type spaces in Clerkenwell. Mm. But it was completely different than what I, well, the thing I thought it was.
Okay.
But now I think finally, as I, you know, grown as a performer and done all this work with myself and with my, like the yoga and working and everything, I think now I feel like, okay, now I've managed to reach that ground that I have something that I feel I can stand on, you know?
Mm.
But if I were to kind of do it all again, I would probably have made like completely different choices in terms of my training and how to try and grow into being, a performer.
I was thinking about doing drama schools in London as well after the education I have. But I kept thinking, well, I already started working, so I'm professional now. And if I get in and I start getting jobs, then I can't take those because I'm in school and you're not allowed to work while you're in drama school and blah, blah, blah. Mm. So, and I'm already too old now, so blah, 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 you know. And then a couple of years go by and I didn't get any work. Mm. So I was like, well, I could have done it now.
Yeah.
And there, here I am. So when is too late, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like, do you feel like, are you too old to do the drama school route at some point? Or
no, you know? I don't think so at all. And I want to tell you something then. I've actually applied for Folkhögskola to do the jazz training.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
You know, I love my singing and I feel that I'm quite good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also feel that maybe I can, you know, take a year and of course I'm going to work as well. You know what I mean? But
sure.
Maybe I can take a year and learn like basics in becoming a
Yeah, but like that doesn't really feel like a foundation. That feels like a continuation.
Yes, it does.
And everybody keep doing the courses and things throughout their life and career. So
maybe.
But to basically take a step back and do the basic training now, you know, kind of weird.
I know. I hear you. But I do feel that if I were to kind of, I mean, I have already applied and you have to like do the test and go and sing two songs, I guess. But if I were to get in and do it, then I would kind of feel like that would be also saying, hell, I don't know at all what I'm doing here. It would be like going back foundation.
Okay. To me, it sounds like it's just a continuation. Yeah, I'm just going to get better at singing.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, fine.
And you have, even though that's a separate thing, you have need, or it's good as an actor to have that as in your toolbox as well.
So, yeah.
You know. But you do a lot of singing, and you do have a band.
Dreaming of Islands, yeah.
With your partner.
Yeah.
Who's a film director. So you both have this as like a side hustle.
Yeah, basically.
And you guys are really good. And you've got some, you know, papers I've written about you, you know, music magazines and stuff like that. So it feels like you got something going.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that? I've been talking to other people on the show about that, like having more than one thing in the creative sphere.
Mm.
Does it feel like it's good for you to complement the one thing with the other? And do you have any apprehensions about it being a problem for your brand? Who are you, you know?
The thing is, I just don't care in a way because I love the band.
Mm.
I love the band. I feel like I'm really proud of it. I think it's beautiful the way it's turned out. I wish we could just spend more time on it, I suppose.
Mm.
But so I don't really think about it like that. But I have had the question, of course. It's like, okay, so what do you like to do the most? And, you know, and I'm like,
as if you have to choose.
Yeah, as if you have, because you don't. I mean, but I feel like I've been thinking about that quite a lot because I was kind of slightly beating myself up about it. I was like, oh God, how to even have the time to be as good an actor as you can be when you also have to like make a living somehow and try and do the best, be the best you can all the time. And then you add this into the mix as well.
Mm.
And how is that supposed to, because I was thinking about it like that, but then I just thought, actually, no, I can absolutely do both things and there's nothing stopping me from that. And it's just a different expression of the same energy in a way and whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, you don't think you dilute that energy though?
No.
Creative energy?
No.
No. One thing maybe feeds the other in some
That's
way.
Exactly the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I decided to take that point of view.
Mm.
Because otherwise...
Yeah, otherwise you would probably not do good work in any of
Yeah.
those. Yeah.
But it's horrible to... I know what they totally say, that you have to be... You need to choose one thing, you know, and...
Some people do. I mean, it's the branding thing, I think.
Mm.
And then I can be like, well, look at Tom Waits. He's a musician and actor and good at both. And David Bowie was, and so on and so forth. But then, of course, there's one point that, well, they got famous doing one thing first, and then they moved on. But yeah.
So
before you're actually established in any of them, is that a problem, you know? So I've been kind of apprehensive about doing music and putting it up somewhere, especially using my own name. If I do that, maybe I should just have like a stage name, and this is what I'm called when I do music. You know, like Donald Glover, who is Childish Gambino.
Who is an amazing musician and actor.
I know. Mm-hmm. Exactly. He can do everything.
I know. I guess in a way it's true, because also my jazz teacher, Irene Serra, who's a wonderful jazz musician, she said to me, she's like, oh, well, you know, if you do music, you should just have a separate website and a separate thing and da-da-da.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just don't care. I'm just like, well, I'm just going to do it like this, and I don't care if it's not good, you know?
Mm.
It just feels weird to split yourself for the benefit of... it being better for, I don't know, whatever reason.
Yeah. I just remember that when I used to do illustrations and comics and stuff like that, I did move away from that when I became an actor by choice as well, because I felt like that was in my past. So, but it was a really conscious decision to close down that website and make a new one, and so it wouldn't dilute my name or my brand or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Because that would be kind of confusing, and I also had people around me, you know, teachers and colleagues and stuff who had that point of view. Well, what are you? If you want to be an actor, you have to be an actor 100%. You know, you have to put everything into it. Otherwise, you won't make it.
Yeah, I know.
We won't look at you as an actor if you're not running around.
I'm just so headstrong, and I just decided I'm very stubborn as a person, I think, and I also think I can do everything my way.
All right.
And maybe I'm wrong, but then.
Yeah.
Well,
you'll find out from situation to situation, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But also, you have been doing this for quite a while, so you didn't really try to do both things at the same time back in the day.
No, I know. I was very secretive about my other stuff.
Okay. Because you graduated back in the noughties somewhere. When was it, like 06?
2006.
Yeah. And so you had been living in London before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I moved to Paris when I was 19 from Lund.
Oh, la-di-da. Okay.
Yeah. And then I studied French, and that was quite wonderful, really. Just, you know, being young and carefree in a way, and living there and just... feeling what it was to become, you know.
So you were living in Paris as a student?
Yes, a student.
Yeah.
And then I saw an ad in a magazine, some kind of like a French English magazine, and it was sort of like an ad that said like bilingual acting workshop and acting studies, da da da. And I was like, oh my God, I think I should try and do that. And I waited for quite a while, like I think a couple of months or something. And then I think I phoned. And then, and then I went there, and it was with the wonderful acting teacher, a French-Italian-American woman called Amy Werba. And she was running this bilingual acting workshop thing. And it was really good. She was very kind of method. She had worked with like Claude Chabrol and some other, God, who else was it? I don't remember, but like French New Wave. She started out, I think, as a director's assistant or something. And then she also was in front of the camera. And she kind of, Yeah, she encouraged me a lot, you know. And she also trained with, like, Stella Adler, I think, and with the whole kind of New York Meisner and method tradition. And she really encouraged me, and I couldn't really afford the lessons after a while because, obviously, I had, like, CSN. And then she was like...
student loan.
And then she was like, oh, don't worry, come anyway, you know, I really believe in you, and... So
that's rare, though.
Yeah.
To get encouragement from teachers and things in this world.
Yeah,
because I think some of them, or a lot of them, feel like their role in the whole thing is to be as mean as possible, so you prove yourself by being stubborn.
To be honest, that's kind of what I felt. It wasn't exactly like that at the drama center, but there was some of that energy in terms of like...
I've heard horror stories.
Yeah. And did not help me at all, to be honest, because that doesn't help me at all. No, I feel like that's just really negative for me, because I was quite fragile anyway and had loads of issues and was quite... not at all kind of... positively responding to that kind of thing.
No.
So I think for me, if she had been like that, I don't think I would have, I don't know.
No, it was good for you that the first one you had was a positive one.
Leading me on.
Yeah. So you knew you had something according to somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. God, yeah. No, she was wonderful. She really was. She is.
Mm.
I don't know. I just think it's... I read something amazing about the school in Kalleflygare in Stockholm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a famous Swedish one.
Yes, famous Swedish one. Like, I think the founder of it, he was just like, just tell them you love them and that they're so wonderful, that they're amazing, and then they're going to be amazing.
Okay. That's that way.
Yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it? Like, I think that's how they should do it. If I had a drama school, that's how I would do it.
As long as it doesn't disillusion you, so because you... somebody wise have said, like, if you believe all the positive reviews you get, you have to believe all the bad ones as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, I guess. That is true.
And I'd look at it like, well, you have to believe the percentage. If you get 80% good and 20% bad, then it's good, because it's in the majority good.
I mean, yeah. I guess it's hard, you know, because in a way, like, you're doing something that, people will have an opinion maybe about whether it's good or bad. And quite, if you focus too much on what people think about your work or it's...
Yeah, but also analyze, where does that critique come from? Does it come from a real place, or does it come from their insecurities and whatever it may be, or problems with something else that you then manifest, or if I make sense.
I think it's very, it's for me, like, I don't, yeah, it's better not to think too much about it, I guess.
Really is. I mean, because even positive feedback and positive reviews, I tend to focus on the negative, like everybody does.
There's one little negative thing, and then completely.
Or if it's not positive enough, I had a review of a play I did.
Yeah,
where we got pretty positive reviews.
Yeah,
and there were three of us on stage, and the reviewer mentioned us three separately.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was great, he did this, and she was great, and then Peter Holland did a fine job, you know. And like, that wasn't as positive as the other two, was it? You know.
Oh,
and I had people like, is this word good?
It is
a positive word. Yes, but it's just serviceable. It's not that it, like, it's wow.
Insufficient praise.
Something like that.
Yes.
So, yeah. And of course, I had to focus on...
Do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I don't. I've watched a bit of it, but it's not really for me.
There's a very funny, like, the last episode. It's insufficient praise.
Uh-huh.
Like, Larry David is insufficiently praising Clive Owen.
Okay.
It breaks his confidence. Anyway, yeah.
That sounds good, though.
It's very funny. I love it. It's like one of my, you know, you have like a happy place, like a show that you can just sit down and you can watch it and you're like, oh, everything's fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have a ton of those, I feel.
Yeah. Mm. Which ones do you have?
My happy places aren't really that much fiction and stuff. I have happy places that are just entertainment TV, you know, like what the Graham Norton show. Like you can just put on a Graham Norton show on YouTube, and I'm good. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. He's great.
Just people sitting down in a nice environment and talking shit, you know.
Yeah.
But happier times. I mean, so Paris was the happy times for you, basically.
That was a good time, definitely. That was a great time. And then I fell in love with someone and I moved to London.
Okay.
For love. And this person kind of dumped me, actually, after like 2 weeks.
It was
terrible. yeah. And
that's not fair.
It was so bad.
You swapped countries for this person.
Very heartbroken. Yeah. I stayed on, though. Like, I made friends. Mm-hmm. I ended up staying, like, quite a long time in London. Before then training at the drama center and then moving back to Sweden in 2007.
All right.
Something like that.
And you, before you moved back, you managed to get some gig in, right? You did something with the Patsy Kensit thing.
I did the Hobby City.
Right. So that was straight out of drama school before moving home.
Pretty much,
yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you ever have any, I guess you didn't have time to get an agent or anything like that in London when you were still...
Yeah, I mean, I did have one. After a while, I got one.
Oh, really? Okay. So
for a while. And I was quite close at getting some things. And it was also before the time of self-tapes and everything.
Mm.
I was very close to, for example, getting the part in, what's it called? Hemtigården.
Oh, yeah, Emmerdale.
Caroline Stoltz. Do you know her?
Yeah, I know the name.
And, yeah.
But that's Emmerdale.
And I did two recalls, and I had to fly. And I was filming that film Spindelgången that never came out, finally.
Okay, with, one of those, yeah.
Yes, with Andreas Klerup or Alexander Dahlström. Or,
Swedish musician.
Yeah, and, oh, God, and I went on the train up there to the studios, and it was... It was a shame. I wish I would have got that. But Caroline was obviously fantastic in the role. Mm. But then I've really been thinking about the whole agent thing, because obviously it would be great to have an agent in London.
Yeah. No, I've been trying to find one as well. There are a lot of agents in London. So, and you got to be a bit picky, I think, because some of the agencies have, well, let's say they have like 25 clients or something, but you don't recognize any of their faces. I'm like, oh, well, that just may be because I don't go to the theaters or whatever. And then you look up what they've done, and they've done like... They've been an extra on something 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm not going to get you work from
this. Agent. I know. I hear you.
So it's a bit of a jungle. But then again, sometimes it's better to have an agent than none at all. So you take what you get sometimes. And that's the big one of the big things for a film actor to navigate that jungle.
It would be good to have a good one, I think.
Yeah, but they won't have anything to do with you unless you've proven yourself to be very castable. So, And you can't be very castable if you don't have a good agent. That's kind of the...
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, a couple of people out of my year got sort of decent representation. Not everyone, though. Really not everyone. I think it's a thing of when you're not in the city as well.
Yeah.
I think...
Yeah, you have a good agent here in Sweden. Yeah.
But I mean, it's just... I would love to have a good agent. Because I feel like sometimes you get to audition for projects that are cast out of London, but not... I do feel like there is a whole lot of projects that you don't gain access to. And that is kind of... That's definitely annoying. It's been sort of on my... very long to-do list for quite some time to try and fix that.
Yeah, I mean, it is opening up the whole where do you live situation. Of course, we apply for things that are on Spotlight or eTalenta or whatever, and sometimes you feel like, I got to be honest about where I am. And sometimes that probably just means you're not going to be even considered or seen. I've gotten better and better things to read for, but... quite a few years back now, I could get things via Spotlight or something, some offer. Hey, could you read for this thing? And hey, could you come by the office tomorrow? And and then I, of course, have to say, well, actually, I'm not in London. So, and you could tell that they immediately, well, bye then, you know.
Yeah.
I even had like a correspondence back and forth on email with somebody. And they, well, this is, we're moving, it's shooting on the continent, like in Europe. And so, yeah, good. I'm going to travel anyway. So it doesn't matter where I am, was my reasoning. So, and they seemed really interested. And then they asked, but you are in London, right? Well, no, actually, I'm in southern Sweden, but yeah, I can fly over if you need me to do some screen test thing or whatever. But since this is going to be shot in whatever it was, Portugal, or yeah, we're going to be traveling anyway. And then I didn't get a reply. All of a sudden, the correspondence just stopped. Ugh. So I was like, "No, I'm going to be."
Don't you dare ghosting me!
No, exactly.
Don't you dare!
So I actually phoned this person up and obviously woke her up as well.
Oh God!
One of those situations, like, "Hi, this is Peter Holland, actor. You know, we've been talking online." And he's like, "Wait!" You could hear like bedspreads rustling and stuff, trying to be official. And so yeah, so I didn't get a reply. It's because, it was you. You're the one who weren't in London. Like, no. Well,
I mean, yeah, now I'm right outside your door.
Exactly. Afterwards, I was like, no, but she said, no, we need you to be in London. Okay, whatever. I could tell this was a losing battle.
Kudos to you for phoning, though, because, I mean, a lot of people would have just been, like, really discouraged.
It's the only time I did, and I was nervous. I was shitting bricks nervous. Because I was obviously not, you know, putting my best foot forward either, because I'm like, you could probably tell from my voice that I was not really the most confident in that situation, but I had just made my mind up to, hey, what happens, you know?
Yeah.
And exactly what you said afterwards, I told everybody, next time I'm going to be like, I'm behind you now. Exactly, but with the whole culture of self-taping and all that, it's going it's opening up, I feel.
Yeah, it's really positive, I think.
Mm-hmm. You've been reading for good things via self-tape.
A couple,
lately.
Yeah. It is really good.
Mm. But then, you get things locally a lot more than I do, actually. It's interesting because I have been trying to cultivate a reputation that is actually starting to work.
Yeah.
That I'm that international actor.
Oh, nice.
I can do English. I can do different accents and blah, blah, blah. And so actually I get, you know, offers like that. Hey, could you read for this American bodyguard? Yes, I can. You know,
yeah.
Those are the offers I get now. But I don't get an offer to do the show that is shooting one block away for people with my actual Swedish accent.
Oh, you mean the Thin Blue Line.
Yeah. You did the Thin Blue Line, right?
Yeah.
And I could play a cop. I could play some kind of lawyer. I could play a doctor. A lot of things.
Yeah.
I didn't even read for that season, at least.
Yeah.
You know?
I hope it's going to be good because it's such a massive thing, you know. They shot it with so many days, and it's such a massive kind of machine, really.
Yeah.
Probably like the biggest thing that they've really kind of done in last...
Well, since The Bridge, at least.
Yeah. But also in terms of like how many days and stuff. It's such a massive show. Mm. And I just hope it's going to be good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And they've... it's 10 episodes, right, per season, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
I think probably, it's going to be 10. Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels like they've been shooting forever. Like you've been seeing them around town and...
Yeah.
And
to clarify what we're talking about, it's a cop show that is kind of documentary style. It's supposed to feel as real as possible about this town, which is almost a bit famous now for being a bit of a
crime city.
A crime city, which is not really if you look at it statistically, but
no.
Yeah, here we are.
That's the media. Mm. But I just really hope it's going to be a good show. And I'm really happy with... I was really happy with the role. It was a really, really good role. Mm-hmm. And I think it went well. It feels like it went well.
What was the role? Can you...
I shouldn't tell, probably.
You shouldn't? No, probably not.
But yeah, I was happy to be in it anyway.
The whole location thing. Mm. What did you? What was the decision to come back back home to Sweden from London?
Well, I mean, it was pretty much whatever. Well, I mean, one thing was, of course, like my life there was also quite like, I don't know, it was quite a hard life in some ways, you know what I mean? Like, I have friends.
It is tough in London.
It's really tough. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, quite a few of my friends were also, it was quite dark, you know, in terms of like what was happening to the people around me. And I don't know. I'd been there for quite a long time as well. And I think by that time, like my naive idea of that, you know, it's not going to be a problem for me to be, I don't know. It is hard when you're not British, you know what I mean? Because even though if I get lines, mm-hmm. I get a script and mm-hmm. I get a week to prepare, then I can probably do like a, you know, a nice kind of RP or whatever. But I'm still not British. Like if I speak, it's never going to sound like I am.
Okay, you're not really.
I'm not going to be able to work properly. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I really understood after a while.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you mean you can't really convince them, your RP is not on that level that you
there
can.
There are 10,000s of nuances even within the RP. You know,
is it
Cambridge or Oxford RP? Is it?
Sure.
Is it Estuary? Is it what is it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To be honest, it's. I don't know. It's a very tall order, I think, unless you are like at least bilingual or if you have some kind of more childhood connection to it.
Yeah.
To be honest, I can tell from almost everyone, almost every Scandinavian actor working, like you can kind of hear it, you know what I mean? And if they're fabulous enough, you don't mind, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work. And then as soon as you're going to improvise or whatever, then it's not going to be, I don't know.
Yeah. I heard a a casting director from London at this panel, and he was like, I don't think you should try to train your accent away. Because that's your selling point. That was his kind of thing.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm like,
We don't... personally, I don't really get off on that kind of thinking because I don't want to play a Swede or a Scandinavian only, you know, or not even barely at all. But that guy, I think he was like casting things like Viking type shows and things.
Yeah.
So he had that point of view, like, well, that's a strength because then I can cast you as this Danish or Swedish Viking kind of thing in this historical shows, you know. And but you never got that kind of feeling like being Swedish is a strength because I'm exotic.
Absolutely not. I think. Not really, because I think. I mean, of course, it's a strength somehow. You know, that you do feel that.
Mm.
But I mean, in terms of, I just thought I would be much more likely to actually be able to work properly if I go home.
All right.
And that's why I did, actually, because I felt okay, you know. And also, I'd been there for quite a long time, and I thought I was probably going to like stay there forever or something. But 7 years, I was like, okay, I think, fine.
Right. So what happened when you came back home?
Well, what happened is that I went and did like a term at the Teaterhögskolan. And it was pretty good.
Just a term?
Yeah. It was also like this long course. It was quite like film.
Okay. Yeah, like a film specialization thing. Okay.
Yeah. It was pretty nice.
How much of that did you have in drama?
I mean, quite a bit.
Drama center. I think all schools probably adapt more and more to the reality of... There's a lot of things happening on camera.
Yeah, but it was also like the thing we had, the specialization was to do with like screen work and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was still good though. I mean, I kind of also just wanted to get a feeling for the industry in Sweden and get to know some more people and da-da-da. And I did, and I don't know, kept working, I suppose, after that, and... stayed on in Stockholm for quite some time, and that's the bad thing as well about living in Malmö, you know, that of course there's a lot more work in like Göteborg and Stockholm.
Because I think I mentioned this before on here that we also have that bureaucratic thing about which is kind of basically a union thing that you have to live physically somewhere to get a job in some productions, because
no,
otherwise they won't get money for...
Let me tell you exactly what it is, because I've even spoken to Film Skåne about it.
All right, yeah, I'm talking about the film in the West, Gothenburg area,
yes,
because they have a real, you know, you have to be in the
Gothenburg
area.
The money
area.
Is earmarked to go to local film workers.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, and that's exactly what it is.
Mm.
It's from the conditions of the financing.
Mm. It's only if they really can't find somebody. Like, okay, we need somebody to play somebody from Senegal, and there's nobody around, so now we have to throw our net wider.
Yeah.
Or actually, I had opportunities because we need somebody who can play, somebody who can speak with a Polish-English accent or play an American or whatever, you know. It hasn't paid off. It hasn't come to fruition. But,
or if you play audition for one of the leads, because then they can come from anywhere, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But as soon as it's a smaller
level,
part.
So, yeah. Mm.
But
no,
it is. Oh, God. But it's so annoying, because then if they do productions here, and then they just work with actors from Stockholm.
Yeah.
And this is what I was speaking to with Hanna Solberg. Because I was like, because we don't get any work in Gothenburg.
Mm.
So how come stuff is done here and then we don't get a chance to?
Mm. Yep.
And then she said that they actually made the rules a little bit stricter here.
Okay.
That they have to use more of the local actors and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. She came up to me. She was like, good, you did some activism.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Changing the game from
within. Maybe. I don't know. I just don't think it's fair, you know, because...
No,
we want the jobs.
I think it's... I seem to remember... quite a fun gag in Wallander, not the British version, the Swedish version.
Yeah.
Because it's just like you say, it's shot around here in the south, but it's a lot of people from Stockholm in it. Like more than it would be living around that area, probably.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of weird. But and then I think in one episode they find a corpse and they check his ID and he's from Stockholm. And then Wallander says, Stockholmer? What the fuck is he doing here?
That's funny.
Yeah, it's like meta commentary on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done a lot of theater? Or have you always been screen-based?
I have done a bit. We did a bit at the school. I don't know. I haven't done that much. I might do some now in the autumn.
All right.
I'm attached to a so-called frigrupp.
Oh, yeah.
Teater Tillsammans.
Mm.
Oh, okay. I shouldn't really... It's also secret because it's not 100% sure yet as pending funding and stuff. But hopefully, I'm going to do some stuff at the Amazing Theater in Stockholm in the autumn.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked with them. And then what else have I done as stage? We did a play called Dumpad.
Oh, yeah.
It was so much fun. At Gangnef, you know, the music festival, and in Fore, in Laterna Magica, in the Ingmar Bergman Theater Barn.
Right, right.
And in some other, locations. And I've done Portlandia, you know that? Portlandia, the tour.
Yeah. I saw that in your bio.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It was fun.
I didn't even know that existed before I read about it.
Yeah. He's so funny, that guy, Fred Armisen.
Yeah,
I was really like, God, he's such a master. Like, whatever he does, it's funny.
Yeah, he's got like funny bones.
Such
almost.
Funny bones. I don't think I've ever seen such funny bones, you know what I mean, up close. It was a very good experience.
Have you seen this show, Stand Up for Drummers?
No.
It's great. It's on Netflix.
Oh,
cause
God.
Because, you know, he's a great drummer. He's even though he's this... comedic actor and comedian and whatever, he's on the house band for the Late Show with Seth Meyers.
Oh my God.
So he's the band leader and the drummer.
Mm.
But he did a stand-up show that circulates around drumming and drummers. So everybody in the audience they are drummers. And that's the focus. You know, he's trying out a lot of kits and talked about this, drummers doing this and drummers doing that.
Oh,
it's really fun. It's not always about that. He does his usual shtick about that he knows all the American accents and he goes around the country things like that. But the main focus is that this is about drumming and musicians. And yeah,
that sounds really great.
Yeah. But what did you do in Portlandia on tour?
We did a scene from Kamraterna.
Mm-hmm.
Strindberg.
Oh, it's, yeah, right.
And then he was like interrupting it in quite a in a funny way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was really. So,
Kvinnan springer, I think he was saying, like, the woman is running. It was some kind of funny thing about him trying to speak Swedish and just repeating these sentences and interrupting, and it was right. Like, really funny.
Okay, so the point of having Portlandia on a location is that it's about the location. So it's Swedish angled? Or
I don't actually really know. No, it was just him standing up and talking. And yeah, it was a bit about Sweden, but... Nah.
But well, wherever he was, yeah. They probably, you know, got some people like yourself in from the that were locals and to do something.
Quite possible.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
Yes. Yeah. It was at the Hornstullstrand.
Oh, sounds fancy.
Mm. I don't know. It's more like a concert venue than a theater.
Oh, okay.
You know? Mm. But anyway, it was a really fun experience.
Those kind of things, I think you should be careful about... you know, stand-up comedians, and when they get too big,
yeah,
it's not fun to see stand-up comedy in a enormous arena or like an aircraft hangar. Basically,
yeah.
That's an intimate kind of art form.
It's a bit like gigs, you know. Imagine sometimes you wish you could see certain like artists or something like in a really small intimate venue.
Yeah.
You know,
when they started out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some gigs, I mean, sure, to see Rolling Stones in a big arena, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
Because it's basically what they do now. But it was would also be cool to see them in 1973 on stage in a small club in London, you know.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But, I've seen, like, Eddie Izzard in the arena here.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, he's great.
He's so funny, though.
But I want to be up close. You know,
I hear.
Because you're just watching a big jumbo screen and get a lot of echo from a voice that's not really suitable for the stand-up format, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I guess that a lot of money in like the performing arts is, or like in music and it's in touring now. So
yeah.
Maybe that's something to do with it, I don't know.
Yeah, that kind of that snake will eat its own tail as well. The bigger the show is, the more it's going to cost and the more people you need to get in and the more expensive the tickets get.
Yeah.
And I for myself, usually when things are get too big and too expensive, I'm just not interested anymore, even though I love the performer.
I hear you.
Yeah, well, sideline.
So
you were in Stockholm for a while, and was it kind of the same kind of deal that you felt this doesn't work for me in some ways? And
not really. It was more like personal reasons, actually. I quite enjoyed Stockholm, but then I...
Seems like a theme. Life got in the way.
Yes, definitely. Mm. Pretty similar reasons in a way. I kind of moved to Malmö because I really was like, oh God, I have to get back to my roots a bit and kind of, because I'm from Lund. Mm. And then I ended up staying and I was like, I mean, I'm still, in my dream world, I would have like a wonderful like one-room apartment in Mariaberget, like a beautiful, beautiful little tiny Stockholm apartment, you know, and then could spend a bit of time there as well. But I don't know, it's not that easy to make that happen. But I'm trying.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I do love it here, you know, with Magnus and the kids. And I just feel like this is where I am now, you know.
Mm.
And that's, of course, why it would be super great to kind of be able to work like more internationally, maybe. And even so, though, you know, it's like a couple of hours on the train. It's nothing. You know what I mean? It's fine.
Yeah.
But then I sometimes really get the feeling that... people are like, God, you live there, you know what I mean? And they think that maybe you're not like serious about your career or something. But I think I am, kind of, serious enough.
Mm, yeah. Some years I've been going up to Stockholm, like maybe what could have been at least half a dozen times.
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds like you're just as stubborn as me when it comes to, no, I can live here.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm insane. You know, I think sometimes if you just go your own way, then you'll end up in the right place.
Yeah,
somehow.
Yeah, that's the thing for everybody who's a creative or an artist, I think. Don't really necessarily listen to what people around you say you should do necessarily, because everybody's just colored by what has been done before. Like, well, you can do this because he did this, and you can do this because she, but you can't do this because that obviously doesn't work. Well, nobody's done it before.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. And times are changing.
True that. But to be fair as well, I have to say that I have been told by like a shrink that I almost had a pathological need of doing the opposite of what people tell me to do. So maybe maybe that also plays into it, you know.
Right, yeah. Childhood story comes to mind in my case. You probably have a ton of them as well. But I obviously have one of those things. I was probably 3 years old.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it was the winter time, so it had snowed. And there was this little slope outside where we lived where all the kids went down with their snow rollers or whatever, snow racers and stuff like that. And I had just gotten one of those plastic snow racer things. You know, you sit and it has a small steering wheel and you can go downhill with it. And down the bottom of the hill, you could just turn right to avoid the... there was like a small hedge or something like that, and it had a fence. So if you didn't turn right, you would probably go straight into the fence, and it was a fence to the left as well.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody like, okay, you see, you follow what they do. You just have to turn. So and my rebellious mind just went no. So I went down, turned left, and went straight into the fence, and I saw it was there. And that the fence hit me on the neck, so I had a big, big sore, big gash on the neck. But I was also kind of pleased, like I didn't do what the others did.
Blood in the snow.
Yeah, that's positively stupid. It was.
Yeah, it is stupid. It is stupid. But maybe the next time you would have been like, fine, I did it my way. I know what happens. Now I can go right.
Yeah. Yeah, you would...
Maybe.
Yeah. You would think that would be a lesson, but I have continued to be like, no.
No, 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 I know what you mean exactly. It's hard to know, like, if... I mean, sometimes I think, God, you do life choices that you think, like, why I've chosen... The things you've chosen, you think sometimes, okay, I'm this is just plain stupid. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like,
and all your friends are like sensible and do sensible things.
Yeah, have great careers and make like $40,000 a month. And
yeah, they have money exactly.
Yeah,
they get like pension. Very sensible.
I guess it's sometimes feels like it's worth it when you know you have that sense of creation and sense of beauty of what you're doing and.
Mm, mm.
And a flow, and maybe you're part of something so that you can feel proud of, something bigger.
Yeah, you're doing life from a different angle or something. There's that part of you that also fights it a little bit. Shouldn't you also blah, 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 you know?
Yes. Wouldn't
you also just get a normal job and actually have those kids and, what you know, all those things? And
yeah.
Before it's too late, that big.
Yes, I want kids. Anyway, let's not go into that. And I also thought I was going to be a shrink. My father is a shrink.
Ah.
And I almost went to school for it.
Okay.
Quite recently.
Did you feel the pressure?
Yeah, definitely. Up? Definitely feel the pressure.
Okay.
But I also feel, I don't know, at some point maybe you just say, actually, this is me now. Mm. Like, this, whatever it is,
and it's whatever this mess
massive
is.
Massive flaws, and it's great hopes, and it's some dashed hopes, and some moments of fleeting glory, or whatever it is. You know, this is actually it now, and it's not like there's going to be like a great Deus ex machina coming down, like with a she went and retrained, and now she's maybe this is what it is.
Yeah, and maybe that have to be okay.
Yeah, maybe. I don't have the answers.
No?
As far as yet, but like, I do feel that I'm like, okay, I guess I'm, yeah, pretty accepting of the fact that this is my life and this is what I do now. Always. I don't mean just giving up or something. Maybe accept yourself as being, at least in the creative profession, because I don't think I really fully have. You know, I've always felt like, okay, but when is she gonna get a grip and do something that actually is beneficial to other people instead of running around and trying to be an entertainer or...
Which is beneficial to other people.
Yes, of course it is.
But you have to remind yourself of that sometimes.
Yes, completely. But it's also like tied into so many questions of like self-worth and all that stuff, you know, and feeling like it's valuable what you do somehow, even though...
Yeah, because we don't get
feel that all the time. You know?
No, because we don't get that instant thing that like maybe somebody who works in, in the care industry or something get. They get that and they come home at the end of the day
and
they
know
Yeah, it's, exactly. They maybe they've saved a life or maybe they just took care of somebody and just they feel like they do that.
I've always felt that if I wasn't probably in this profession or the life that I am, that I would probably maybe be in a caring profession.
Okay, yeah.
My parents kind of are also like academics, but that kind of
path. Yeah, well, you're a psychiatrist, of course.
Yeah. Also my mom. But this happened.
Yeah. No, but you also you have to keep thinking that things are possible. That's the really important thing.
This is what I have to say, actually, and this is something that can really, really piss me off, is this, because for you, I think, it's really all possible. Like, you're in your best age, you know what I mean? Yeah.
No, I'm not.
yes, because, and this is something that that is actually something that I thought I might want to talk about today, and that is the fact that there are no roles for women.
Right.
Over 40 or something.
That's changing, though.
It's changing, but it has changed. And I actually had a... I tried to... Because I did an MA, you know? So then I thought, okay, I might do a doctorate then. Yeah. So I did a proposal to Teaterhögskolan in Malmö in 2015 to do a study on what it does to women who are in this profession not having any way of actually developing themselves.
Right.
Into the profession.
Yeah.
Because the figures are actually quite discouraging.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And traditionally you have gone from being the young girl to being the young woman to and then nothing until you were old woman.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And then you can be old.
Yeah, exactly.
There's that void of the middle-aged and upward, you know.
It's just very frustrating because, especially like for me, because, you know, you started much later than me in a way, but I still feel I started quite late, you know what I mean? Like, I was around 30 maybe when I started kind of booking roles. And that is quite late, you know, for a woman in this system. But for me, that can be so frustrating because I feel like, I'm just kind of hitting my stride now. You know what I mean? I'm beginning to... I understand myself better now and I feel I can bring better life to characters now. And then I'm going to be like looking forward to what, you know, to what potential development in my career as I hit then my middle age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so disturbing to me. And then anyway, now I'm trying to do a new PhD in Stockholm. They're having a new... I have to send it in next week, my proposed project. But I do think it's when I first started thinking about it, nobody really talked about it. And at least people do now, you know, after everything that happened with like Me Too and Tystnad Tagning. Because it's just very frustrating. And I don't know why it is. And I feel like in Sweden, it's actually kind of a bit worse than it is like maybe in England, for example.
I think so. Naturally, because there are less things being made. And the big change, I think, is because there's so much being done. There are so many streaming services and stuff like that. So there can be a show for everybody today being made, basically. So, but in Sweden, there isn't really yet. So
let's hope it happens here, too. And let's hope we get scriptwriters making like more interesting and dynamic, cool roles for women who are of all ages. I mean, that would be such a revolution, I think. And It's like, if I see another show on Swedish television where there is the girl, she's like 25, she wears great jeans, she's really tough on the outside but quite fragile within,
mm-hmm.
and she moves to the countryside because of something has happened, or she has had some problem in her career, but she's also a cop and she has to solve this thing. No!
She's no. also a cop. Always. Like on the side.
Yes, always and always. And they're always so young, you know what I mean? But if you look at like British cop shows,
yeah.
then you know you have. Yeah. Do you remember that amazing one? The one with Stellan Skarsgård, River.
Oh yeah, I heard about it. I didn't see it.
Ah,
yeah.
But there are so many good roles where the women are like any age. Mm, they don't have to be 25 and also a cop on the side.
Just oh, by the way, I'm also a cop.
Yeah, it's like okay.
Yeah, we've been talking about this before. It's kind of also I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like an ebb and a flow thing that cancels itself out. Because like you said, there are probably most parts for men somewhere between like 25 and 45 or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means most actors are there. There's so much competition.
Mm.
So why would they pick me over the other 10,000 guys who are just like me, you know?
Mm.
And maybe it would... For some people, would be helpful to be very unusual in some ways
yeah.
because as soon as they need somebody like that, hey, that guy,
yeah.
because that's one of the three we have, you know,
yeah,
or that gal.
I hear.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. Like sometimes you never know really why they pick you for something.
No, oh no, that's really interesting to find out what your type is according to people who cast you.
Yeah,
but when I started out, I had no idea that I was a bad guy.
Hmm.
And then I...
Oh, yeah, of course you are. I didn't think about it, but well, of course you are.
Yeah, well, that's what I get. I get, like, psychos, killers, and husbands that are and murder their wives and, you know, things.
Oh, God.
A lot of things like that. And apparently, criminals. And if I'm somebody in a uniform, I'm a bad one of those, you know.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And and I had no idea when I started.
Yeah,
that was the thing.
You seem like a pretty nice person in private.
Well, on the surface, at least. Maybe casting directors can see through that and like, I see your dark soul.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and then some people just say, no, but you're like the guy next door. Yeah, that's what I feel like because I'm such a wimpy,
I could really see you as anything, to be honest. Are you? Yeah.
Yeah, and so... That's why it feels kind of weird to be the badass criminal dude that's, somewhere.
I think it's something with the eyes and the...
Yeah, that's what... oh, that's what he said. Oh, damn, what's his name? It's an actor who's on Sons of Anarchy. And he was also in the Crossing Lines, the show I did. So he played the main bad guy in this cop show, Crossing Lines. And I played somebody who worked for him, but we didn't work together. So when I saw him at this convention, I went up and said, hey, I played your guy on this show. And so we talked a bit about that whole experience working on that show. And he tends to be bad guys as well. And I said, what is it with us? Why do we get bad guys? And he said, well, you know, you got good eyes and good cheekbones, just like me. That's why. But is that it? Is that it, really? Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a friend who used to cast me in things back in film school. And he was like, yes, you have that Mephistophelian look. So I'm going to use you every time because he liked that.
That's nice.
So have you found that you have a type? And did you discover it from what you got cast as? And,
this is a good question, actually. I was just thinking, God, I hope he doesn't ask me. But of course he's gonna.
Sorry.
No, I don't really know. Like, I think... sometimes I get the bad, the bad types.
Mm-hmm.
I quite enjoy that. Recently, I've been getting a lot of, you play a mother.
Right, okay.
A mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, yeah, sure.
It's also a cop.
No. Not that one. But then I can feel like, okay, yeah, you play a mother. Like, is there anything else to this woman?
No.
No, basically.
Because a mother is just a mother.
It's just a mother. But I don't know. What do you see?
What do I see?
Tell me.
Actually, what you described, that weird woman who's also a cop, that's actually somewhere where you are. You could play like the Saga Noreen. Yes, Saga Noreen in The Bridge kind of person, yeah. I think, who was like, yeah.
She was the first one, the prototype for these roles, of course.
Probably, yeah.
She was wonderful as well.
Yeah. No, but I can easily see you in like crime procedurals, that being the cop. Maybe in investigative, blah blah something.
That's good because a lot of those shows get made.
Yeah.
Yeah, but some are great. I mean, Califat. That one was really good.
Mm.
Really great, I think. Probably one of the best Swedish TV show in a long time, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Really great.
Yeah.
Very exciting and very.
Yeah. They're very heavy, special story as well. Yeah.
Heavy subjects.
Yeah.
I love spies. I would like to play a spy.
Yeah, I think you could do that. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I see you more
on that side though than the bad guy side, I think.
But
have you gotten
like
a lot
the heroine,
of
heroin? Yeah. In like a
yeah, I mean, I'm maybe the femme fatale. I don't know. Yeah, have you gotten a lot of those things?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when it's a bad guy, it's kind of those types.
Yeah, kind of, I guess. Yeah. I wish they would make more spy stuff. I used to read a lot of, like, when I was really young, I used to read a lot of these, like, Jean Le Carré and like, the thrillers.
Yeah. I saw the Night Manager that they did of the Jean Le Carré book. With Hugh Laurie and Tom Hiddleston.
That
was really good.
Can I ask you, sorry for being uninformed, what is Crossing Lines?
Crossing Lines is a European cop show that's about this department that works out of The Hague, but they work across the borders of Europe. So that's Crossing Lines. That's the point of the title. So they shot it in Prague and in Italy and a bit in Holland, of course, because that's their base. And it's supposed to take place in more countries than that. So the part I was in was in Poland. So I played a Polish person. It was all about those crimes that was necessitated a police force that works across the borders. It has Donald Sutherland in it and things like that. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But it's not a big show, but it's on Netflix.
But when, like, is it on there now?
No, I think they finished. I think they did 4 seasons and then stopped. I'm in season 2.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's nice, though.
Yeah, well, yeah.
How many,
yeah.
Like, did you have a lot of days? Like, how?
No, not a lot. I'm the bad guy of that episode. But I had 3 days. That's all I needed, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm not in many scenes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have to catch it.
That episode.
Yes, exactly. I want to see you bring the bad guy skills.
Spies. That's the dream. Are those the dream parts?
I don't know. Definitely. But also, like, I don't know. I mean, I would love to get, you know, it's just sometimes, you know, if you could find like somebody with a really strong vision and it's a, and you fit into a universe, and it could be really anything. Like, I'm not like with genres and stuff. It's not like I'm fine. But just like if you like love the script, then you know, the director, and you understand each other and you get to be part of something, that's great. I mean, that's, of course, what was the dream.
Yeah. But
you need it to happen again and again as well, because it can happen, but it needs to happen. It needs to keep happening, you know? That's, I guess, the hard thing with our careers, you know what I mean? It's like, because, you need to...
You need a couple of key things, though, that you can be really known for, and that can make other things keep rolling, but...
Mm.
Then maybe that is the thing that the flag that keeps your presence known.
Right.
Like that one big part or something that define
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
That's probably what's needed. But back to what you were talking about mm-hmm. before with the parts that don't really exist as much. And I think part of what has happened in conjunction with all the streaming services and stuff is that people have been writing and creating their own things
mm-hmm.
and just creating things that people didn't realize. Oh, yeah, you could do this too. Yeah, I guess. So I think that's a big thing we have to remember, like write your own things or try mm-hmm. to try to get a team together and or collaborators to create something that the world really didn't know that it needed and wanted.
Yeah.
And that has happened a lot, I think, with especially female actors and of a specific type or a specific.
Have you seen Edith and Louise?
No, I
haven't. It's so funny.
Yeah,
it's really funny, but it's kind of about that. You know what I mean? It's a Danish TV show.
Okay, yeah.
And they're in the creative profession, and they're seeing their careers kind of. Yeah, they're trying to get their careers going and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
It's so funny. It's really good.
Yeah.
And tackling all these things like being a woman, being not 25, being blah, blah, blah.
Hmm.
But there's a lot of humor and, well, it's really funny, really great. But but that about creating our own thing, I think me and Magnus are working on that, as I said, a bit.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens out of it. But it's a little bit micro format now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but we keep seeing that, like... people who maybe don't get a lot of parts and all of a sudden they sell their own idea to Netflix or something. And then people
Hell
are
yeah.
like, whoa,
yeah.
this is so interesting.
Yeah.
And they, you know, we didn't know that we even wanted it before yeah. we see it. And because they probably tell their own story or something. And yeah.
So is that where you think the industry is going with like a lot more productions being made and all the streaming stuff and all that?
Yeah, I think so. I think productions are going to be more plentiful and maybe smaller and more specialized stories. It's going to be happening even more.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, like, I'm really all for it, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and at the same time, of course, they're going to keep finding properties that already exist that are popular, you know, popular book series and whatever. But also in that world, in the literature world, new kind of stories happening, written by unusual authors, and you know, that all of a sudden blows up, and then the big production companies are going like, oh, we need to get on this and make this actually. It's
So I guess it's just a matter of like sticking to your guns and keep being interested in whatever you happen to be interested in and not lose faith and keep working and then...
Yeah, and also have faith that things are going to happen. I mean, the cyclical thing as well, like things that were popular are going to come back and there might be things happening in the future that you're going to be perfect for when you're 55.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Suri and McKellen, let's say.
He didn't
know that someday they were going to actually do a great movie series of Lord of the Rings.
I love
when he
Lord
was
of
perfect for being Gandalf, you know.
Yeah, he's wonderful as Gandalf.
And Patrick Stewart, he was like older than I was when he became Picard, and really, you're gonna do a new version of Star Trek? It's never gonna work. But it did.
I wish I was a Star Trek nerd. I'm not at all.
Okay.
I'm so bad at it. I know, I know a lot of people who are. I know I'm a little bit into Star Wars, but not a lot, and not at all into Star Trek. But like a massive Lord of the Rings fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I know Picard, like the name. That's about it. Sorry.
No, I'm such a nerd, so I'm a fan of all those things.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I figured.
So that's those are the kind of things I want to do. I want to do, you know, genre stuff and fantasy and sci-fi and
I love fantasy, but I think I really think the thing is as well with me, because I am so stubborn that I'm never going to quit either.
No.
I know I'm always going to kind of do it in whatever capacity is possible for me, and then I guess sooner or later, you know, you're gonna do something. Like I already think I've done some pretty awesome things, but it's like, who knows what might come along, as you say, because I'm like really in it for the long haul in a way.
Yeah,
like I really look at, for example, like Karin Bertling. Wonderful actress, and she's how old, I don't know how old she is, but she's...
She's got to be in her 70s at least.
Yeah, something like that. And she's working so much, and she seems to just be just enjoying it so much as well.
Yeah, I'm going to contact her to be on the show.
Oh, you must. Mm. You must. I think I kind of almost... You could ask her when she's on the show, but I'm not sure. I think I came up with the name La Bertling.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of really stuck now.
Right, okay.
But yeah, I think she's... Oh, God, I love her. And I think as well that with her, like, you can really see that she takes so much enjoyment out of the work. Because I think that's something I've been lacking a lot. Especially, like, I think I'm much better now. But I think when I was way younger and maybe, you know, got a really big opportunity for something. And for me, it was just so much anxiety and so much, like, feeling of pressure or whatever, you know. So that, like, the fun and the feeling of, God, this is fun. That feeling was not... strong enough for me, you know. And that's why, like, when you look at someone like her, I can feel very inspired to look at her, because I can see she's just taking so much joy from it, you know. And just going for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's kind of a role model in a way, I think, for that. That
she found her niche through the years.
Yeah, completely. I mean, she's probably always been very wonderful, but she really is.
That thing about giving up, I mean...
never. Like, I'm never going to do it, though.
No.
That's not going to happen.
But I keep having those thoughts all the time. Like, oh, there's no point. Nothing's happening. Is there no point? It's just, you know, just have to remember that, well, that's the only way to 100% sure fail.
Completely. Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
There's still a chance if you know, don't give up.
But also, like, I don't know what to say about it, but it's like to what... are we comparing ourselves as well? You know what I mean? Because, for example, like in Sweden, you know, you can win like a Guldbagge, like the Swedish...
Academy Award.
Highest recognition in the industry, really.
Yeah.
And then after that, you may not work for, what, years? Okay. So, like, I don't know, how is it supposed to look? You know what I mean? What is supposed to happen for you to be successful or for you to, you know, to feel that it's worthwhile, you know what I mean?
Because to me, it's just making a living and being recognized enough for it to just get offered a job and then another one after that and just keep going. That's when it's done.
But I just think it's really...
And you're never done, but that's when I reached a level where I feel like, oh yeah, because I'm not there at all.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't know how many people who really feel they are. Of course, if you're like... I don't know, Christer Henriksson, and you can actually sell out Dramaten. And then everyone's like, okay, this is the guy who has so much bankability that, you know, then maybe you've... I don't know, but, like, that is not the reality for, like, such a majority of like, the people in our profession.
No,
you know what I mean? So I think it's also a matter of, like, slightly moderating one's expectations. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think, like, you look at you and you've done some pretty cool things, you know? And of course it's going to be terrible anyway, the whole day-to-day business of being an actor, I guess. I don't know. But, like, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between feeling like you have arrived and then you never feel like you're done. You have to have that balance, I think. So you're always hungry for the next thing. Not greedy, but hungry for it.
Everyone's hungry, I think.
Yeah. But also feeling like it's actually happening.
I hear you. But then, you know, I think it's like, I don't know, but maybe it's almost something like when you're fishing, you know, and you're sitting and the water is like completely calm and you think you're never going to catch anything. And then suddenly, whoop. Like, I don't know how it is for other people, and I can only relate my own.
But then it's just this small, little, skinny mackerel, and you can't do anything with it. You just feed it to the cat.
That's what
it feels like sometimes.
Yeah, of course. And it's like, oh, well, sorry, we can only pay you.
And then somebody's just standing behind you being like, maybe you should stop fishing. Nothing's happening. Come on. Do this instead. Come on, work at the butcher shop instead. Yeah, there's plenty of food. I don't want it.
Yeah.
Strange examples, though, since I'm plant-based. I don't... You shouldn't eat...
That's very good.
You shouldn't eat creatures.
I really respect that, you know? I try and be more plant-based, but...
Yeah, it's a struggle.
Yeah. Well, How long have you been entirely?
I'm not entirely. I'm just, that's why I'm saying based. I'm not vegan. I'm trying to base myself around the plant world. But it's been more and more through the years. It's easier now as well, since my girlfriend is totally vegan and has been for many, 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 many years.
Yeah.
So that's inspiring, you know, if you have somebody close to.
Yeah, I mean, you get quite a lot of, get affected a lot by the people you spend a lot of time with.
Yeah. So where do people find you when they want to find you? Online? And
At my webpage, www.idajillensten.se. And sure, on all the socials as well, like Instagram and Vimeo and all that.
Yeah.
SoundCloud, of course, for the music.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your Instagram is...
Maggan _ Gyllensten.
Right on. Right on.
We leave a link.
Yeah.
We leave a link for that.
Right. Okay. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.